We Are SC Podcast Fall Camp Preview Edition. Gary Pasquis joined by Daryl Rideau and John Jackson. And guys, we're sitting here at Pacific Dining Car. Had a nice lunch here, getting ready to talk some Trojan football. And so let's launch right into it. A lot of expectations around the Trojans this year. A couple good seasons. You had a Rose Bowl. You had a Pac-12 title. But now you've got Clay Helton coming to media day. You've got social media stuff coming from the athletic department, openly talking about national championships. And Daryl, let's start off with you. It's great to talk that. It's great to say that. There's a lot to like about this Trojan team.
Sure.
But there's also a lot of change in this last offseason, not just in personnel. But talk about how you wanted to really address that in terms of what's gone on around the program.
You know, it's interesting because the first thing I thought of when I heard Clay Helton speak about the program raising the bar and elevating its expectations to a national championship, considering the performance coming off of the Cotton Bowl against Ohio State, Notre Dame, and if you really want to go back, you know, you can go as far as back as how they performed against Alabama. Those, to me, were measuring sticks, barometers as to where your program is. And I wasn't quite sure if USC was able to elevate their level of play to compete at that level on a consistent play-in and play-out basis. So with that being said, what concerned me most about those remarks, and I understand, you know, you got to toe the company line, so to speak, if you're USC and set those expectations. But when you're breaking in a new quarterback after, you know, the last 2 years under Sam Darnold, is that really the type of expectation you need for this program and that type of pressure, considering the schedule and how it lays out to begin the season? What are your thoughts?
No, I agree. I just think that, you know, at USC, if their expectations are any lower than a national championship, somebody's going to pull a U-Haul truck up to your front yard and, you know, tell you to get a new head coach. I think it's tough, you know, for Clay. Obviously, you know, everybody between media expectations, the fans' expectations, are usually based around the quarterback position, for whether that's deserved or not. And of course, with, you know, with Washington being the favorite, they have Browning coming back, so of course that makes them the favorite in the conference. And so I think that just from a writer's perspective, even from a fan's perspective, the fact that there's questions around the quarterback position is why you don't elevate USC to that level. And it's understandable, you know, from the way we're sort of measuring teams these days. You obviously, everybody figures you have to have a great signal caller in order to have success. This team is built differently, and we're going to find out how to, they're going to have to win in other ways and other forms than they have in years past, because I think that, you know, fans were very spoiled with Sam Darnold, you know, obviously being, you know, how things have opened up in his career. It's no question the talent level that he had. But with that, you're going to break into somebody new, which means the other positions have to step it up. And I think the Trojans are really strong at those other positions as well.
Yeah, and JJ, I'm glad you touched on that, because one of the things that also is alarming for me is addition by subtraction. You know, last year, the offensive coordinator play calling was divided by T. Martin, who's designated, at least on paper, as the official offense coordinator, but shared time, or at least shared some of the play calling duties with Tyson Helton, who's no longer with the program. That's the subtraction. But then you bring on two additional new faces in Tim Drevno, and you promote Brian Ellis, a graduate assistant, to the quarterback coach. Well, to me, those are new voices in a room, and you're trying to break in new quarterbacks or at least build some type of chemistry and continuity. So if you're T. Martin and you had a chance to flirt with other programs, even, you know, flirted with the NFL, only to come back to USC, my thought and perspective on all of that is that's your greatest bargaining chip. If you want more voice in a room where there's somewhat uncertainty to preserve your own position as an offensive coordinator, your leverage would have been to address how much communication you have with the quarterbacks. And I'm not in those meetings, so I don't know how effectively he communicates. But for the past, you know, years he's been around the program, he's been identified with coaching up the receivers. So why not clear up that narrative so that, at least me from an alumni perspective or a fan's perspective, it's clear and concise as to where the messages are coming from and who's actually delivering that message and articulating T's views as he's calling plays onto the field. what is that dynamic going to look like? Who's going to be on the sideline actually communicating with young quarterbacks, looking them in the eye to determine if they're if they have the right frame of mind or if they're starting to get that deer in the headlights look?
And Clay definitely talked in spring ball saying, hey, yeah, the play calling is going to be what we saw last year. T will be our play caller. But he also said, and there will be input from others, myself and others included. And one of those, you know, being Drevno, I think there's a lot of people's hope that, more of a running game with Drevno that he brings could be part of what the offense identity comes. But, JJ, let's talk about this on how it might affect the, when it's the decision of choosing a new quarterback. And this one, there's a lot at play here, and how Clay Helton makes this decision is just going to be fascinating to watch. But how are you thinking is the right way to approach it, especially when you look at that early part of the schedule? Because I think the schedule almost breaks out in two distinct ways. Those first three games – I think are different, maybe in the first four games, are different than the rest of the schedule. I think the thought of putting an inexperienced quarterback, because no matter who you choose is going to be inexperienced. Oh, guess what? Two of your first three games are on the road at Stanford or on the road at Texas. That's a tough road to haul.
Yeah, I mean, there's no right answer, you know, to this question. I mean, I think the only way that there's a right answer if the Trojans end up 3-0 or 4-0 after the
good call, Clay.
After the start of season. Yeah, I knew what I was doing. That's a great decision. It's really hard. The first reason it's hard is because you have JT Daniels, who's coming in, obviously, with well-deserved high accolades for what he's been able to accomplish, and no question, you know, the best quarterback in the country in terms of coming out of high school, now trying to make the transition. The problem for Clay, for the coaches, you know, even for the team, is that if Clay makes this decision on the quarterback, let's say 2 weeks before the season starts, that means, in theory, JT Daniels would have been on campus. He'll be on campus 4 weeks before the first game. That means that he was able to earn and beat out the other two guys within 2 weeks. That's a huge mountain to climb. And I mean, just off of, you know, not even off of talent, just based off of experience and knowing the offense and those types of things. It's hard to beat somebody out in 2 weeks, right? In 2 weeks' time. The real question is going to come is how much confidence does Clay, T, and, you know, the offensive coaching staff have in the guys that were there? In a perfect world, those are the guys that you would want to start because of the experience, because of they've been in the Coliseum and, you know, had pads on and got ready for the pregame warm-up, all those types of things. But the one thing I will say, if there is a person that can pull it off, I've been around JT, you know, ever since he got into high school, and if there's a guy that can pull it off, if there's a guy that has the moxie, it's going to be calm enough, that's going to be knowledgeable enough, that's going to be a, you know, studied, you know, more than anybody else, he's going to be as knowledgeable as anybody else in the room, Daniels can pull it off because he is that good, right? And he is that type of player.
But when you think about the sample size you just alluded to, you know, you talk about primarily with the 2 week sample size of watching and evaluating him in practice against maybe the ones or the twos depending on how the reps are allocated. And he's sharing that competition with two other quarterbacks. I look at that and I say, okay, is there another sample or comparison? And the first one that comes to mind would be another former modern-day quarterback. Help me out. Yeah, Matt Barkley. Well, if you look at when Matt Barkley came out, yes, he graduated high school a semester early to come into spring to compete. So you had that time without the pressure of the season right behind you. Well, JT Daniels skipped his senior season. So he technically graduated as a junior
No
benefit of spring ball.
Right.
Came in during the summer without the benefit of getting critiqued by coaches, you know, during these player-run only practices. So now you're talking about putting them under that type of pressure. And if there's anyone like you alluded to who may be equipped to handle that type of pressure, it could be potentially him, but it's unprecedented. Right. Now you open up at home against UNLV, which USC, based on their defense, should be able to handle mightily. But then you talk about really being battle-tested going into Stanford and then a short trip on the road. And I say a short trip only because your routines are typically altered when you have to travel and go away. But you're talking about going into Austin, playing at Texas, a team that is looking at revenge, going into double overtime versus a battle-tested Sam Darnold the year before. So there's a lot of elements that could easily see this program looking at the face of a 1-2 start or a 2-1 start, depending on, you know, your perspective.
the one thing is, on this particular topic, we sort of seen this movie before, right? I mean, we saw Max Brown get the starting quarterback job and then Sam Darnold coming in and taking over for him. Now that we look back on it, people would argue that they waited too long to make the change at quarterback and, you know, Sam should have been in earlier. Well, yeah, it's easy now to be able to judge that now that he's a first-round pick in the NFL draft. And,
I'm great at hindsight.
And the 4,000-yard season that he had last year and the, you know, 98 touchdowns he's thrown in 2 years as the USC quarterback. So, yeah, now in hindsight, it's easy to make that decision. At the time when that decision was being mm-hmm. made was the problem. And if you remember, going back even to the Alabama game, the Trojans got beat bad in that Alabama game, but not many fingers were pointed at Max Brown for being the reason that they lost that game. They pointed a finger at a lot of other places in terms of how that played out. Then going into the Stanford game, Max played well, held his own in the first half. Mm-hmm. And then after halftime, once they didn't have a chance to win, they put Sam in, and you saw some flashes of, okay, he might be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And then remember Utah, Sam had him in position to win, but he fumbled. Right. And not, you know, I mean, there's other factors that would have cost him a game, but he fumbled at a very pivotal point of that game. And then people were questioning the other way. Did you pull Max too early? So, you know, this is not a very easy, obviously not a very easy decision. And the only thing that can solve and answer the question the right way are wins and losses.
Let me ask you guys this. In this day and age of football, we saw at the end of the national championship game last year, the national championship was decided with two true freshman quarterbacks on the field. In this day and age of Elite 11, of 7-on-7 passing, the advancement of the quarterbacks by the time they show up as a freshman, how many reps they've taken, how many quality competitions they faced. JT made the statement at the end of last year, I've got 40 Trinity League games under my belt. It's a pretty solid argument to say I'm ready to go as a true freshman. Does that factor into the thought at all as opposed to when you guys played? For a true freshman.
Well, no question compared to when we played. I mean, there just wasn't the quarterback circuits. There wasn't the, you know, Elite 11s. There wasn't all the different competitions. I mean, it's a full-time – quarterback now for high school players is a full-time job. I mean, it doesn't end at the end of the season. Matter of fact, a lot of people would argue it intensifies when you get to the passing leagues and the passing league tournaments in terms of being – you know, more pressure, more animated, and even better competition that you're going against. You're facing better guys when you're on that travel – you know, that football tour, if you want to call it that, in the off season. So these players get exposure to more talent in the off season, playing against more talent, working out with more talent, getting trained by more talented coaches, even, you know, the guru quarterback coaches that are around. Right. It's not like JT he's gone to the best quarterback coaches. He's gone to, you know, some of the best trainers and those types of things. So he's already far more advanced than quarterbacks were in the past. And because of that, the learning curve becomes, you know, the learning curve isn't as big, and you're able to make this transition faster.
And one can argue that JT Daniels is perhaps coming into college, into USC, with more experience than the two quarterbacks that are currently on the roster. And when you talk about, you know, starting for 3 years, you also have to equate for each year that modern day played in the playoffs, those are extended games too. So if you count all that up, it may total almost four years of playing. Mm-hmm. And that's continuous playing versus sitting behind and watching another quarterback. But what I also think about is that from the time that I played in the late 90s, early 2000s, to now when quarterbacks primarily like Carson Palmer were under center and they climbed the pocket. You don't see that so often now. You know, a lot of this run-pass option, the RPOs, and these cards that are held on the sideline kind of eliminate a lot of the thinking for quarterbacks, which allows for someone like Daniels to perhaps come in and feel confident that he can compete at this level because that's no different. The transition is similar to what he's experienced in high school versus a lot of quarterbacks adjusting their style of play to a new style of football once they get to college. But with that being said, that is why I think that it's unfair for this coaching staff or this program, USC, to place higher expectations than where they truly are. Recognizing and understanding that this – that where you are as a program, you're really trying to reestablish your system and set a tenure or set a tone and an identity beyond your defense post Sam Darnold. We don't know what this program looks like beyond Sam Darnold. And so while if you're Clay Helton 2 years ago and you had the decision between Max Brown and Sam Darnold, you knew what Sam Darnold was going to produce because he showed it flashes of it in spring and even in fall camp. Right now, that is the X factor. And it's a variable that Clay Helton is going to have to address earlier than later if he's going to give this team a chance to be successful.
I thought John Major put it well when he said, yeah, JT has the advantage right now. He hasn't thrown a single interception on Brian Kennedy Field.
Right.
You know, so everyone's got good feelings right now. It's going to be I'll tell you guys, I know all of us would agree with this. I cannot wait to watch this. We've been talking about it from the day that JT announced that he was going to be coming in. Can't wait to see what this competition is. Can't wait to see how they handle it. And can't wait to see who emerges as we go along. Daryl, you just alluded to something here, and that is talking about the defense and what that identity is on this team. We've been talking all this whole time about the quarterback competition, but let's not be deceived. The strength of the team this year is going to be the defense. And what I absolutely love about the defense this year is the leadership and the depth. And the leadership I'm talking about, got the guys that came back. When you're talking Cameron Smith, yeah. Porter Gustin, Iman Marshall, Marvell Tell, I'll throw a Jane A. Harris in there.
Sure.
Those are a lot of seniors
yeah.
that all could have had a chance to go on to the NFL, and they came back. Every level, yep. Daryl, is going to have a guy.
Battle-tested seniors
that have
been through this transition before. They had to carry the offense when the offense was trying to break in a Max Brown and a Sam Darnold. They understand how to be patient and that they have to create and make plays. The difference between 3 years ago versus this year is they can summon those demons of coming back from behind, being poised when the opposition has more reps on the field and are attacking you inside the red zone. This battle-tested group that you mentioned, led by Porter Gustin and Christian Rector, what I love what I love about this group is you're now mixing in experience with young athletic talent, some from last year's class that will start to emerge into this group, and then others who are just, you know, making their way on campus. And as they try to find their way around the classroom, what I love about what I've seen, at least during spring ball and going into this fall camp, what I'm expecting more of is the nonverbal communication that you see with that group, mm-hmm. how fast they play, how well they're able to coach one another up so that there becomes this sense of confidence. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the flip of a coin, defense goes out first every time to start games for USC.
A trademark of Pete's teams when you were playing, Daryl. JJ, one of the things I love, we talked about the veteran guys coming back as leadership, but just as Daryl kind of pointed out, another factor of this defense is just how deep it is. How many guys that you haven't really heard their names yet, you haven't really seen too much of Levi Jones. You know, Jordan Eosefa got a nice taste last year, but now he's going to be going here. A Bubba Bolden, you know. These guys are ready, and they're in the system for years. So now Clancy, who has been known in the past for not, let's say, rotating a lot, he's got a lot more guys who not only are talented, but have now been in his system for a year or two that he can plug in to help rotate a little bit more.
Yeah, and Clancy, obviously a smart coach, you know, he realizes what he has. And as a coach, in any situation, you have to feel comfortable with the guys that are playing on the field, which is, I think, is due to the short rotations in years past. But you're exactly right. The fact that there's more depth on the defense, the fact that they can rotate more guys in, the fact that, you know, knock on wood, if injuries were to settle in, you hopefully won't see it. You know, that's a benefit they wouldn't have had in the past. When guys go down, there's significant losses, and then you know, there was pronounced weaknesses in the defense. I think that that's sort of the big benefit for Clancy. It'll be interesting to see how he uses them, though, because
yes.
You're right. He has been the defensive coordinator that has not rotated a lot. It'll be a little bit of a change from him, obviously, on game day in terms of, you know, getting those rotations down. But I think the excitement about this defense is that when you can rotate a lot of guys and you're going into the fourth quarter with guys that are relatively fresh for two reasons. First of all, you're hopefully in a good rotation, but secondly, you haven't been on the field a lot. you're getting on and off the field, providing the offense with great field position or better field position than, you know, possibly maybe in years past. That's a huge factor for this team. The defense, no question, has to lead this team, especially through the first four games, because those games will be won or lost on the defensive side.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind when I think about the quality of depth of this defense is strength and agility or athleticism. This group is so deep that you can almost mix and match interchangeable parts. When last year, when Port Augustine went down, I saw Christian Rector step in, and he provided a different versatility and a different mm-hmm. element. And then later in the season, I saw Jordan Iosefa step in, and he provided a much-needed physicality to his game. And he was able to play open in space. But when I look beyond that linebacking corps in the front seven and I think about the versatility of the secondary, I think the same thing. You know, while you have a Janae Harris at the nickel spot, I can also see in certain run situations going up against a Stanford or Notre Dame, or even a Texas for that matter, a Bubba Bolton, you know, taking some of those reps to provide a much needed presence in the box. So with versatility and athleticism, and then you also combine that with the experience that this group now has, it gives this defense much added versatility.
Yeah, and from a coaching perspective, the difference is last year when these guys that Daryl mentioned were able to come in, and I even include Isaiah Langley in that conversation, when they were able to come in and play well, we as fans or, you know, media, commentators, whatever, viewed it as what a great heroic effort that Christian Rector just gave USC. What a great heroic effort that Isaiah Langley just gave USC, because they were able to step in at a moment's notice and fill in play so well. This year, the difference is you get a sense that this is what these guys are supposed to do. They're all, you know, top flight players, which they of course were when they got recruited. But now the expectation is the same, that if we have to go to the next, the backup linebacker or the backup defensive tackle, the expectation is for the level of play not to change. We don't have to make adjustments to cover for them or any of those types of things.
And it's funny, I was at the Edison Passing Tournament this summer. And there was one high school coach, and we started talking Trojan football. And Daryl, he was pointed right at the secondary. He goes, "Okay, but these are the same guys. Why are they going to be better, Gary? Why is the secondary going to be better?" And I think one of the things, and you just wrote a note down, Daryl, I think, stability of the system. This is the third year of Clancy's system. And these players, there are so many of them, as you just alluded to. There's a lot of guys who have been in there for a while. So are you going to point to that as much as anything? When you've got a guy like Jonathan Lockett, when you've got a guy like C.J. Pollard, who we haven't seen yet. And I know we said, okay, this is great that there's heroic efforts. It should be, I don't want to say passe now.
Yeah.
But all it is a matter of getting there. Wasn't that the way it was, J.J., when you played? Hey, it's just next man up, and you're getting your shot now.
Yeah, and that sort of is, you know, the expectation. I mean, all these guys are great players, you know, coming out of high school, and they were tops in their class. But even as a player, you can't reach your full potential of development until you are in a system and understand what the coach is asking from you, right? If you're playing and thinking, I mean, it's one thing to get a defensive or offensive call and go out there and do the play. But when you know the play and you know it's how it's supposed to be executed, then it takes on a different level. And I mean, you've seen that in games, you know, in almost every single USC coach that's had the job, is that the progression, you know, when I played, it was the progression being with Larry Smith. The first year, yeah, we were able to execute the plays,
right.
but being able to know the plays,
yep.
Know what's supposed to happen, that's when players from a talent level start to take off, because they can't think and play. If you have to, as simple as it sounds, it's hard to think and play. You just have to be able to play,
yeah.
Right?
You know, what's interesting about what you're saying is about this system, because they're now 3 years into it, they're able to improvise within the confines of their responsibility. And what I mean by that is no longer, like you talked about, they're thinking about, okay, my alignment and my assignment. Now they're finessing because of what they watched on film. They're able to adjust, tweak them, their bodies into positions to make plays. Now, what does that do for a program that goes out and starts recruit? Instead of recruiting guys, you're now recruiting body types. Okay, this guy reminds me of, you know, call it Iman Marshall or Christian Rector. You're looking for these big bodies or these type of sizes that fits a certain mold into your system. And that plug-and-play mentality allows for your program to have sustainability. That is what they've identified on the defensive side. And I know that if you're Clay Helton, that's what you're hoping for to accomplish on the offensive side. But one thing, if I can, and I'm sorry to get away from the defense for 1 second, but when you think about this quarterback battle, I'm somewhat puzzled that we're even having a discussion about a quarterback battle. Because oftentimes when you're evaluating talent, you're evaluating the potential replacement for the first guy up. So for some reason, there appears to be a gap between the recruiting of Sam Darnold and the possibility of a JT Daniels coming in. Or is he that special of a prodigy of a talent that would cause one to say, despite the guys that have been in this program that I understand the system, this presence of a high school kid coming in simply overshadows and overwhelms the room?
And it's funny you say that. We did an article today on the website talking about the depth chart of the roster and how you get here. And it's important to recognize that Sam left with 2 years remaining. And so that's an extra year hole in there. And it also, the year that Sam came in, Ricky Town was technically part of that class, and he's gone.
Well, and remember, I mean, even this is even going back, you know, within that same class, you had Ricky Town, of course, like as you mentioned. You had Jalen Green, who was a quarterback that ended up being a receiver.
Yep.
He still should be at USC with eligibility. And how about a Jayne Harris, who came to USC as a quarterback and is now starting as your nickelback? So there's been a unique transformation in that quarterback spot just by the recruits that have been there for one reason or another, right or wrong. They have not ended up being quarterbacks throughout their college career, and so that's sort of the next challenge. Not to mention, recruits these days, they want to play as freshmen. So when Sam Darnold is starting as a redshirt freshman, has that Rose Bowl game, guess what? There's not a lot of quarterbacks that are just racing to get to USC to sit behind Sam. I mean, of course, nobody knew that he would, you know, come out as fast as he did. But when those things happen, you know, these high school quarterbacks, we talked about how much training and experience and all that kind of stuff. That's another facet of the recruiting process. Guys are timing. They're not coming to schools to wait for their junior and senior to start. They want to start now. And if you have a star-studded quarterback, Sam Darnold, JT Daniels, you are not going to get the top quarterback the next year because that guy wants to go someplace where he's going to play. So now there's going to be a lag in recruiting for that reason.
And let's look at the current recruiting class right now. You want to come in right after JT Daniels? You know,
how many guys they have committed right now?
One.
One guy.
and it's not happening, but we do have a guy for the following year in Bryce Young already. Right. So, Daryl, it's a fascinating point you bring up, especially when you consider – JT wasn't supposed to be here yet.
Right.
It was so you went until December without a quarterback in this class. How would that have looked? And we know they looked at some graduate transfers. They looked at it, but they only have 3 quarterbacks on the roster right now, which is always, you know, hey, would like to have 4, but it is an injury. Let's stay on offense for a minute and just talk about offensive identity. We kind of hit on it earlier, the fact that if you've got an inexperienced quarterback, his best friend is going to be a strong ground game. We've got some tailbacks. Stephen Carr, who knows where he's coming back off his back injury, but he was cleared to practice last week. I'm very happy with that. Let's see where he's at. I'm pretty happy with Aka Cedric Ware. I personally would have put him as my MVP of spring. He was out there every day, provided that senior leadership. I think he's going to be a nice bell guy to have out there. And then Vavai Malapiai is a guy that not a lot of people are talking about, but he's pushing 230 pounds, a big Polynesian guy coming at you. I don't know if I'm squaring up and tackling him. So you've got some tailbacks, JJ. To me, It's been a factor in the last several years. How does the USC offensive line come together? And I'm really interested to see it. You got Toa Lobendon moving back to center. You've got, in theory, a lot of starts coming back on the offensive line. How do you see things right now?
Well, it's a very experienced offensive line. There's going to be a lot of pressure on that offensive line, though, because just like we're talking here, it's going to be a new quarterback no matter how you slice it. It's going to be experienced running backs in the strength of one of the severe strengths of the offense will be the running back position. For that reason, that tells me, you know, not even being a coordinator, load the box and stop the run first and force the quarterback to beat you. So teams are going to do that. That's just a fact. It's coming. So now the pressure goes back on the hands of, you know, T. Martin, Clay Helton, you know, and the play calling in terms of what are you going to do to combat it? Because teams are going to load the box. They're going to force you to do what you don't want to do. You do not want to, you know, put the ball in up there 40 times, but they're going to try to make you do it, especially early in the season. And that's where the rubber is going to meet the road for this team. I think that they're going to have to meet that challenge. They're going to have to trust the quarterback, whoever the quarterback is. The receiver core, you know, let's not forget the receiving core is very talented as well. So for that reason, you should have guys open. You have great targets to throw to. The receiving core is – arguably as good as it's been in years,
right?
In terms of the guys that they have on this roster, and they're youthful, but they're still very good. And because of that, you're going to have to rely on the passing game, and so that's where the strategy comes into this. You're going to go against teams that are going to try to force you out of your comfort zone, which your comfort zone is running the football. They're going to try to force you out of your comfort zone, force you to throw it, and then now somebody has to step up and execute.
And because of that, JJ, for me, it's fool's gold, especially on the offensive side. And the reason why is because you're going to emphasize going into camp that you want to run the ball with aggression, and you're going to go into situations with that type of game plan. But now where you're going to run into problems is, how patient are you going to be in terms of allowing that running game to develop when you know they're stacking the boxes and you don't feature a traditional fullback? As a result of that, do you chase the cheese? Do you go after what arguably is the best core of receivers since the Pete Carroll days? I mean, when you talk about the likes of Tyler Vaughn and Michael Pittman Jr. coming back, and then you add a Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was an exceptional talent that should replace Deontay in the slot. It is very easy for a quarterback to fall in love with that type of talent because you know if the ball's in the air, they're going to go after it. But then you risk the chance of becoming one-dimensional, and what happens if some of those balls drift, some of those balls lead to three and outs, and all of a sudden you take what could have been a long sustaining possession becomes a short possession. How patient will you be as a coordinator in terms of letting the running game develop when you're breaking in a Stephen Carr coming off of injury? How many reps will he carry? Will it be running back by committee? And if it is running back by committee, will you be able to identify their skill sets to the extent where you can implement it seamlessly into the game plan without it looking obvious that you're going from a power running game to a finesse game? Those are a lot of questions that, again, that are probably keeping Clay Helton up at night. Those are great challenges because you got a lot of talent to work with. But I look at this, the fact that you're setting high expectations when you should really allow the team to determine its expectations. You can set a certain benchmark, but don't put the pressure of national championship or bust when, and maybe I'm over-exaggerating that expectation, but it certainly feels that way. There's a lot of hype around the program when you're really trying to reestablish your identity offensively when you know what the rest of the two other elements of the team look like.
JJ, let me ask you about this receiving corps, because I know that, USC never seems to have a problem finding receivers these days. But I'm looking out there right now, and I think this receiving group can go either way. I love the two starters in Pittman and Vaughns. I do think Amon-Ra will be the starter in the slot sooner rather than later. But I do think Velus Jones has made some strides this offseason. He's bulked up. He's 200 pounds right now. I think he's your deep guy. I think he's your fly sweep guy. But I think Amon-Ra is a starter. So those are four guys. But we haven't – Josh Emmitt-Baby, we don't know what we're getting from him yet. Randall Grimes, we don't know. Devin Williams is the other freshman. That's a mystery on what he can bring. We don't know what's happening with Daniel Emmitt-Baby right now. We got three good receiving tailbacks. All three of those guys can catch. How are you picturing this pass-catching group right now? And Josh Follow, I don't want to forget him if he's healthy.
Yeah, and I think that, first and foremost, you got to keep everybody healthy. That's going to be a big key because, like you said, with Vaughns and Pittman – especially early in the season, you're going to want to have a security blanket, and those guys being 6'3 and 6'4 respectively are, great receivers to throw to. Amon-Ra is going to – I think that his relationship, obviously playing with JT in high school for so many years and having that continuity and, sort of an understanding where each guys are going to bring, he's going to be the security blanket. I feel if JT is a starter, especially, he'll be the security blanket because the throws are shorter, they're easier. It's going to be about completion percentage. That's a stat that we're going to keep a close eye on throughout the year, is completion percentage. Mm-hmm. Because as you complete passes, obviously that just makes more positive plays than negative plays. It's just sort of a simple math thing. So I think that, from a receiving corps standpoint, this is a very talented receiving corps. Now, they're going to be labeled as young because there's no seniors in this receiving corps, but they all are very experienced. Whether it be all of them played a high level of football in high school, right? And you don't want to discount that. But then, obviously to come at USC, play early, the expectations are early. And to be quite honest with you, between Vaughns and Pittman, those guys are, by most people's account, are pro-ready, pro-ready guys. So you're going to have a very talented receiving core. For that reason, that's going to force it, in my opinion, if you can hit some of these shots, that's going to force the defense to stay honest, because you just cannot allow these guys to be lined up in one-on-one coverages all day long. The big challenge is, from a coaching staff perspective, they've got to be able to see these things happening in front of them, sort of, you know, anticipate what the opponents are going to try to do, and then with that, be able to attack the weaknesses of whatever team they're playing against, attack the weakness of that team, which most likely will come in the secondary some way, somehow, because they're going to have to bet their money on trying to stop the run. I think this Trojan run game is very good, as you mentioned, and because of that, there's going to be open receivers, there's going to be one-on-one matchups, and that's what they have to exploit.
Darrell, let me go to you right now and ask, is there anything that we haven't talked about yet? Any key that you think, any player group? I'm going to tell you what I would say right now.
Okay.
I'm looking at that SC nose tackle spot, and I am so pleased with where things potentially are going to be if everyone's healthy. If Marlon Tuipulotu is healthy, I think Brandon Peely might have been my star of the summer workouts. Mm-hmm. I think he looks so ready to go in terms of being the athletic kind of 340-pound athleticism that we don't see too often. Then you have Marlon, then you could have Jay Tufele. Being that strong at the point of attack, I just think is going to be something we haven't seen in a long time. What would you say right now? Anybody you're particularly looking at, or anything you're paying attention to right now?
Offensively, I am curious to see, as it pertains to the running game, can Stephen Carr, coming off of an injury, carry the rock more than and be effective more than 20 times? If you include additional passes, let's say a total combined of 25 to 30 carries, or touches, I should say, with 20 of them being running. Can he carry the bulk of that load, or will it be running back by committee, and how predictable will it become as teams evaluate who's rotating in and out? That's one. But on the defensive side, I am going to stay selfish, and I am going to stay within the secondary. Why? Because USC loses due to academic ineligibility. They lose Jack Jones. Jack Jones, right or wrong, he created a big play capability with his athleticism. Now you take him off the field. You have Iman Biggie Marshall and Isaiah Langley. You're breaking in Elijah Griffin and, some other young cornerbacks. What I like about the secondary is their versatility from going to man to zone coverage. But when you talk about taking or replacing someone like Jack Jones, who primarily played against the flex receiver or the Z receiver, off the ball receiver, he saw a lot of touches, a lot of activity. So what do you do with someone like Iman Biggie Marshall, who has improved and made leaps and bounds improvement over the years, but has always played against the split end or the X receiver out there on an island, typically saw post deep passes and slants. Now he's seeing more combination routes if you flip him to the other side and you bring in an Isaiah Langley and you put him out on an island. So I am curious, as a receiver, JJ, or as an, if you're looking at it from an offense, the opposing offense's perspective or a coordinator's perspective, who would you attack? If you flip Iman Biggie Marshall over, the liability of him being susceptible to double moves, or do you leave him out on the island and then you replace with help one of the younger corners coming in?
Yeah, well, I think that with this team, and this sort of goes to the strength of the defense, which is a little bit different than last year, is that the strength in this year's defense, well, one of the strengths, I think the biggest strength in this defensive team is the defensive line. Last year, because the defensive line, there was a lot of young guys playing, so inexperienced, getting their feet wet, those types of things. Clancy, you saw forever loading the box, he had the two middle linebackers up in the A-gap a lot, to force pressure on the offense to at least make them make decisions faster. I don't know if he's going to have to do that this year because of the guys that, that Gary mentioned, with between Brandon Peely, Tuipulotu, Jay Tufala, even Connor Murphy, don't forget about him, and Malik Dorton, who also was, was a key player last year that's coming back. Mm-hmm. The depth and the strength of that defensive line is going to allow Clancy to not be in those type of pressure situations or the feeling to have to constantly put pressure on the offense. It will allow him to play straight-up defense at times and just say, my guy's better than yours. And also, and Darrell, you know this, is that when you have defensive linemen, especially at the nose tackle, that are dominant, that can beat, you just know for a fact he can beat the guy across from him. It breaks down offenses completely when the nose guard has to be double teamed. If you have to double team the nose guard, that when you start to do the math of how the blocking schemes have to be arranged, that sort of tears down everything because you have to double the nose guard. This is the first time in, you know, in several, you know, let's see, we have to go back a couple years to the last dominant nose guard with
Stevie T for his one year. Yeah.
So Stevie T was dominant. But when Stevie T would became the dominant player where he was in
Look
the second half
changed.
Of the year, it changed everything for every opponent and made life a lot easier for Clancy Pendergast calling defense.
When I interviewed Christian Rector a couple weeks ago, he goes, we watch that Rose Bowl all the time just to watch Stevie T.
That's right. That's right. And he just destroyed Penn State and just made it so they had to change their blocking schemes. Teams don't want to double nose guard. If you have to double nose guard, it just changes everybody's assignment. It almost makes you have to formulate a new offense or guess which side he's slanting to. Because of Stevie T's effectiveness, it changed the USC defense, made life a lot easier. You could afford to double team guys, receivers in the secondary if you had to. You didn't have to worry about all out blitzes because if you knew that Stevie T was single teamed in a pass rush situation, he was going to win and force the quarterback to get rid of the ball. I think that that's the situation that they face from a defensive line perspective this year because those guys are so good.
And by resetting that defensive line in the backfield, all it takes is for the quarterback to flash inside his eyes just slightly and then lose track of where guys are in the secondary, which allows for the secondary to now, you know, jump routes. And because of that, I think that this defense has to continue to be built from the inside out, you know, and where we're talking about a lot of the experiences coming from the outside in terms of the outside linebackers and the secondary, to be honest with you, if the emphasis isn't on, like you said, commanding that double team, getting the pressure, playing with low leverage, it's all for naught. Because it's going to spell for long days for the guys in the back.
And that's one of the things that I like, even though, okay, so we got those nose tackles. Yep. You've got Cameron Smith right behind him. Mm-hmm. And then we haven't really talked about Marvell Tell in this discussion.
Yeah. He's just battle tested. I love his game. I mean, we were talking as we were eating earlier, JJ, about Marvell Tell. When he came in as a freshman, he was so concerned about being deep that he probably overprotected the secondary by playing too deep. But now he's in the middle of everything. He's in the middle of the action, and his confidence has grown. And he's now one of the more vocal and instrumental leaders within the secondary. And his presence on the field provides a necessary safety blanket. Considering you're still replacing the likes of a Chris Hawkins in terms of experience, where is that going to come from? That's why, as much as I'd love to see a rotation by committee, mm-hmm. because this system can afford for that. I don't want to see that in a secondary. I want to see two staple safeties lock themselves in, and then, you know, if you're going to rotate underneath them with the corners and the nickel, where J.N.A. Harris plays, if necessary, if you have to pull him out into a corner position.
Let me ask you, Darrell, there's a lot of guys back there. There's Bubba Bolden. There's the possibility of Ikeeley Ross. There's Isaiah Polamau. There's C.J. Pollard. There's Hufanga.
Hufanga is something else.
That's a lot of guys.
Yeah, there is, and not a lot of positions to fulfill. So what that's going to spell for is great special teams play because guys are going to have to, you know, contribute elsewhere. But for the most part, you know, if you can find stability in chemistry, that's going to go a long way, especially early in the season when you're going on the road up at Stanford in the farm. Then you have to travel to Austin to play against Texas, and then you come back to a ruckus Coliseum against Washington State on a Friday night. You're going to have to rely on nonverbal communication, and you're going to always and if you're Clancy Pendergast as a defense coordinator, you're going to lean heavily on your veterans. Make no mistake about it. And that's where it's going to come from. So, again, this is a very talented group, but how fast can they come together? Now, the last thing, and again, just to put a ribbon around this quarterback competition, will we truly know how good this group can be considering how much further developed the defense is? You know, if you talk about breaking into JT Daniels, will we see the best of him against this USC defense considering he may not have ever seen the style of defense that they play, running that 3-3-5 defense that they run or that hybrid, whatever you want to call it? It's something that's unique, and I've seen quarterbacks wilt under pressure when they see it for the first time. The only person that I've never seen wilt under it was Josh Rosen. He seemed to be a savant, and he was able to figure it out. So, again, if any one of these quarterbacks can master this defense and pick their holes, then I would consider them to be battle-tested and ready for UNLV game one.
It'll be interesting to see. Let's hit a special teams question. One of the interesting coaching moves, and, Daryl, you talked at the beginning about some of the changes. I think some of the coaching change moves bear talking about. But moving John Baxter from coaching special teams and tight ends to just coaching special teams. I have a feeling that's going to pay dividends, primarily with special teams. I love the move of Kerry Colbert, a guy who is very near and dear to both of you guys.
Yeah.
I think he's going to do great things at tight end. But with special teams, I think our kicker and punter are fine. Those guys are set. The return element, the return game element. I understand why they put a Jane A. Harris in, but there's a lot. If you look on the WRSC message boards, what Jane A. Harris did at punt return last year is one of the most criticized elements of the team from last year. On paper, I understand why they did it. A Jane A. is a guy who is so smart, always seems to know what he's doing. That move just didn't seem to work to the fullest extent. You have Velas at kickoff return, and he did okay, 24 yards a return.
Yeah.
That's not bad. A guy like Amon-Ra tore it up at punt return. I think he's one of the better ones you've seen. You've got other guys, Hufanga, Hudili. You've got other guys on the roster. Can you guys see some shakeup at the return game? How do you think things might go with that?
I do. I think oftentimes punt return is by proxy. It's situational. You know, when you just need a fair catch, you're going to go with the sure-handed guy. But when you need a home run because the down and distance and the punter gives you the circumstances that would benefit an opportunity for return, then you may see someone who's a game breaker. But we were always of the mindset that you go with the most sure-handed person. So a Jane A. Harris may be penciled in initially, Gary, but I think long-term, I think that is by proxy. I think you might find that position will be open for competition, but we may not see who becomes the ultimate starter until the end of fall camp.
The one thing you have to keep an eye on with special teams is that with the team that we predict USC will be, which would be a defensive-minded team, special teams start to play a more important role because you there's no points to be given away if you're playing if you're playing a defensive-minded game. So, you know, Budrovic, who was outstanding last year, is going to have to be outstanding again. Chase McGrath, who I couldn't be prouder of in terms of what, you know, obviously coming in and being a hero early in the season and being just a model of consistency throughout the year. That's a those two guys coming back, you just can't discount that.
Right.
I mean, a year ago, I can remember Clay talking about the kicking game.
It was as big of a concern coming into the season as anything.
That's right. That's right. And he said, you know, the kicking, and I remember he made some quote of sort of like, yeah, we practiced it today, right? But no compliment towards it's going in the right direction. And for, you know, Chase to step in and do the job that he did last year, you know, I mean, it was huge, right? It was huge. So now these guys are looked at his strengths, right? And because of that, you know, the special teams units as well will be looked upon as strengths, and especially when we're talking about a team that will play more of a field position game as a ball possession game, because we're looking at, you know, that we just want the opportunity to work on short fields. The special teams play such a key role in that. John Baxter's always good at blocking kicks.
Yeah.
That's going to be a consistent thing.
And that's why I think it goes back to attention to details, recognizing that that's an area that will play a more vital role, having John Baxter's full attention on there to be able to kind of scrutinize the work that's being done there to get the most out, the most effective and efficient production out of special teams is going to be crucial this year. So, again, if you're looking at the maturation of this coaching staff as well as this team, it's making subtle moves like that that could prove to pay dividends later on in the season.
Right. And the one thing about John Baxter, he is probably the most detail-oriented coach, you know, on this staff. I mean, you really can't say enough about the things that he does. And the fact that, you know, most colleges don't even have a special teams coordinator. They just let the other position coaches handle, you know, one special team per coach. They don't have one dedicated guy. So that's a huge advantage for USC. I mean, it's shown its dividends, you know, over the years. I even think that last year amongst the tight ends, I mean, we are not talking about a lot of tight end miscues. We're not talking about missed blocks. We're not talking about missed assignments. We're not talking about they were on the wrong route or even dropping the football. So I think that Coach Baxter did a great job. I love the fact that they were able to move Kerry and give him the tight ends and as well as the slot receivers. You know, I think that's great for his career. I think as well, and even more, I think it's well-deserved from a true Trojan that is you know, that has played at USC, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to USC, and did a great job as a, you know, graduate assistant or, you know, sort of helping out, and now getting that full, that he deserved that full-time opportunity, and I'm glad he got it.
Well, guys, we're sitting here right now. The Trojans will begin fall camp on Friday, 4 o'clock on Bryant Kennedy Howard Jones Field. We'll go through for 4 weeks, and then September 1st against the Rebels, and we'll see you, JJ, in the revamped press box of the renovated Coliseum. Get out there. That should be fun.
I heard I got a better seat than usual. I'm a little bit lower.
Certainly closer to the field. Than,
I don't know if there'll be air conditioning, but
and 1 o'clock on the first, that'll be an
That's
important
right.
factor.
I got my fan.
Ready to go. So for Darryl Bedell and Garrett John Jackson, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.